The world is going through changes. Changes happening at a speed that we have never seen before. This is leading to disruption, chaos, panic, fear, hysteria, and a turbulent economy and marketplace. How do you protect your wealth in a turbulent world? How do you invest for cash flow and alternative assets to escape the rat race in times of uncertainty? How do you decentralize yourself, your family, your community, your business, and your investments to become sovereign and escape the matrix? If you are looking for strategies, tactics, and techniques to escape the rat race and matrix, you are in the right place. My name is MC Lobsher, and this is Cashflow Ninja. This is Cashflow Ninja. My name is MC Lobsher. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Cashflow Ninja and spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at cashflowninja.com. That's cashflowninja.com. I've got a fantastic show for you today. I'm joined by Chris McIntosh. He writes an incredible newsletter for Capitalist Exploits. And he's also got an advisory service, Glenorchy Capital, which manages capital from investors around the world. Chris has got a very, very good grip on what's going on in the world, especially when it comes to capital flows and why capital is moving from one place to another. And he also has a unique insight to the massive asymmetric opportunities that are presenting themselves as capital is moving from certain parts of the world over to other parts of the world and from certain sectors into other sectors. Chris, great to see you.
It's been too long, mate, but happy new year, and happy new year to all who are listening. I suspect it's going to be an incredibly interesting one. So let's try and navigate it as best as we can, eh?
Absolutely. As we now are done with 2023, done and dusted, what are some of the major themes that you saw in 2023 that's interesting and important to be aware of that we're taking into 2024 before we look at all of these things unfolding in 2024?
Wow, where to start? Let me attempt to highlight some of what I think are the most important trends unfolding. And to answer your question directly, we're simply moving further towards outcomes which are largely predictive or predictable. And what I mean by that is one of the topics that we've been discussing for 4 or 5 years at CapEx and Insider and Glenorchy, our management asset management company, are the realities that we're very likely to move into a civil unrest, civil war, conflict environment within the Western world, within the United States in particular, and certainly within Western Europe. And I think we've seen a lot of that unfolding over the course of last year as we move towards, for example, elections in the United States in November. The methods that are being implemented in order to, shall we say, put in place an ability for that election to go only one way, and or to be cancelled should the necessity for that transpire. We have seen Donald Trump's, taking out from, the Colorado state court, or not state court, the Colorado court, saying that he's not eligible. We've seen, all of these various court cases against him, largely the kind of events that you and I, growing up in Africa, took for granted, right? And that was just part of how politics was operated. And we're laughable to the rest of the world who would look at it and see it for what it was. What is interesting to me is that there's still a large portion of the population who don't see it for what it is. They actually believe the mainstream media that are telling them that it's about X. And you can, if you just follow the money and you look at the machinations behind it, you can see that that's not entirely true. So be that as it, and I guess the ability for that to take place is what's required for the ultimate, Neil Howe talks about the fourth turning. And you basically need to have a complacent, ignorant, and even largely arrogant society in order for that fourth turning to take place. So we are further down the track with respect to that. We are also further down the track with respect to the debt cycle, which is an 80-year debt cycle. We're at the tail end of that. So we saw we have seen for the last 2 years bonds performing in the fashion which we had anticipated they would perform. And consequently, we've seen equity and commodity markets and various other markets perform relatively better as a consequence. Because remember, capital has to move from one place to another. So we can talk about some of those things and how we view that at our firm and how we view the probabilities going forward. There is at the moment, quite a large contingent of the financial community who are concerned about, shall we say, deflation and concerned about equity markets, which, so we can talk about that. We're not in total agreement, if you will, on the idea that we're going to have deflation. And we're also not in the agreement that necessarily all equity markets will come under pressure. Largely, again, just as a consequence of the fact that the vast majority of the capital that does exist in the world, the biggest markets that do exist in the world, are the bond markets. And that is where the bubble lies. That is where the greatest risks lie. And in fact, that is so that is, we've been shown the initial innings, first innings, if you will, or even second innings of what that looks like. And so going forward, it's has a large impact in terms of how interest rates are likely to be set globally. And increasingly, central banks are losing control of the ability to set those rates. The market is moving ahead of them. And that's creating all sorts of other problems at a geopolitical level, including the necessity to go to war, for example. So there's a lot of things that have we're moving further down the track with respect to, again, trends that were already in play.
And they're accelerating. Some of the trends we looked at is the global monetary system, this debt-based global monetary system, which is in transition, the banking and the financial system, which is obviously part of it when it comes to that. Lots of things happening there, which we'll definitely talk about that some more. Then we've, if you look at pandemics, which doesn't seem to go away. There seems to be actually more and more happening behind the scene when it comes to the legal infrastructure. It seems that almost lessons that were learned by the establishment, think tanks, NGOs, governments, and so forth, of actually how to implement it even more draconian. They've taken steps to increase that legal framework. And then we've got the climate change, which it draws, obviously some crazy regulations and ESG scores. And then as you've just brought it in, a big part of what's going on, the destabilization, is the war, right? The pockets of this, of wars unfolding, whether it's Ukraine and Russia, whether it's in the Middle East with Israel and the Palestinians, and then also the China and Taiwan issue. It seems that there's a lot of friction across it. I want to just go finish off by where you started with the what's happening across the globe. There's over 40 elections or something like that. I haven't fact checked that, but yep. Somebody who's rambling it off, but it's like 40 elections globally. The world is increasing. Pick your country. It's polarized.
The polarization is far more heightened in Western quote unquote democracies than it is in many other jurisdictions. And in fact, I spoke about this, before the grand fraud, shall we call it, that descended on us in 2020. Before that, we were talking about this Firstly, you have a revolutionary cycle in terms of like, so we've got actually like a 250-year revolution war cycle. We've also got the 80-year debt cycle. And then we've got the short-term 30-year credit cycle. Interestingly, all of those have converged at the same time. So lucky us, we get to experience a lot of fun. But what if you go back through history and you look at previous types of environments like this, one of the things that we as human beings are very, very sensitive towards is safety. And in an environment where your safety that existed is popped, if that particular bubble's popped, if that narrative, that experience that you've literally grounded your life on, when that is shattered, when that is broken, it makes for a real asymmetric trade. To some extent, we know this having grown up in South Africa, where white South Africans had a particular environment that was very predictive. It was very stable, if you want to call it that, with respect to how things operated. And then that changed. And we were very, very lucky in that change went through a non-violent process. Okay, be that as it may, now, 20-ish years later, we can see that there was still a real asymmetry there. Things have got descended fairly dramatically. And as a consequence, you've had massive capital movements. What we're looking at now is the potential for the same kind of environment. However, there's no guarantee that it's going to be as benign as that which took place in South Africa. In fact, it is increasingly evident that the probability of that is far less likely. In that environment, what human beings look for is safety. And I've made the case that we will see certain, if you want to call them dictatorships or authoritarian regimes that are stable, will benefit as a consequence. So I wrote about this since 2019, Dubai as a primary example, is an example of a politically stable jurisdiction that has a certain rule of law. And it has, as a consequence, extremely high level of safety. It's also very predictable. Democracies inherently are less predictable because they can change depending upon who gets elected every 4 years, roughly. In a place like Dubai, and I'm simply using this as an example, and you can pick many other countries in the world that have similar types of structures, political and economic structures. In that environment, there is no risk that in 4 years' time, things change significantly. They don't. If they're going to change, they're changing as a consequence, typically, of trends and plans which are very well notified and marketed, if you will, to the citizenry or the public or the public at large. You know, so for example, if there's a big project that's taking place in Dubai, it's notified. Everybody knows about it. The sheikh will come out and say, "Hey, this is our grand plan for 2030 or 2050 or whatever it is," and they make it very evident as to what their plans are, and then they go about trying to implement those plans. In that environment, you've got a certain level of stability that you can be secure in. You might not like, for example, the fact that it's an authoritarian dictatorship. That ideology, if you will, becomes less important when you have people outside your door, when you have the rule of law that you had thought you had no longer protects you, and it protects the ruling class who are coming to take your assets, for example. So I think there still exists a large asymmetry in the world on a macro basis. Our job as asset managers is to take advantage of that, both in terms of asset classes, sectors, as well as geographically. So I think that we're moving further towards destabilization in terms of particular countries where people, and look, I'm watching this take place now. I was just on the phone early this morning with a colleague of mine in the UAE, and looking at relative numbers with respect to real estate. even though the place is booming, even though they are building more, they are still roughly 50% behind demand year over year. They're massively behind. And you go, why is that? Well, part of it is supply. They put in a lot of restrictions with respect to the ability to bring more supply to the market in the real estate space after the crash that took place post 2013 through 16. And as a consequence now, developers, for example, going in have to have at least 50% capital upfront, which means that they basically can't really go bust, right? So you're not going to see bankruptcies and people losing their shit. So that's kind of a good thing. But it also means that the ability to enter that market, if you're a developer, is much more restrictive, right? You need to have the capital. You need to go out and you need to raise it, or you need to have it, or whatever the case might be. So there's a restriction in terms of supply. And at the same time, we're having massive demand coming in. Why? Because the costs of living in Western Europe in particular are going up, because the restrictions in terms of freedoms are going up, because the taxes on all manner of things are going up. It's all working in the wrong direction, and it's pushing people towards looking for alternatives. And so you're seeing this dynamic taking place. And that's just a microcosm of the world that is benefiting as a consequence. There are others, but I think, again, you know, back to your question, what are the things to be focusing on? That's one of them. We're going to see, continue to see this taking place. And I don't actually, I'm not particularly negative in general about the economy, the global economy. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's a lot of people speaking about this deglobalization. Deglobalization is taking place largely in the West. But if you look around outside of the Western world, what we're actually seeing is globalization. You run from Turkey through, like, say, Istanbul, through to Jakarta, and that entire sort of region, if you're looking at a map of the world, almost every single week, there are new trade deals being done. There are new alliances being built. There are new restrictions being lessened. You know, it is literally globalization that is taking place across these regions, including Africa. What is interesting is that the West is simply not participating in it. And so we in the Western world, especially deluged with Western media, are simply told that everything's, you know, this is happening and that's happening, which is true. But it discounts what is taking place elsewhere in the world, which is the vast majority of the global population. And increasingly will become the vast majority of the global economic output, because one is going in one direction and the other is going in the other. And it doesn't mean that it's going to be a linear trend. Nothing's linear. There will be hiccups along the way. But that is a huge trend that is unfolding. And I think it's important for people to understand, at least from a 40,000 foot view, what is actually taking place, to try and position themselves for the future 5-10 years out.
I want to take a moment to share something very important right now. Are you trying to figure out how to protect your savings from the banking collapse, which has already started, and the coming financial crisis? Most banks will fail. Deposits that are not insured by the FDIC will be lost, and there will be bank bail-ins. And this collapse in the banking system will lead to chaos in the financial system. Banks also provide loans to real estate investors. So what do you think is going to happen to lending in the event of a banking and a financial crisis? You can be proactive and position your savings to protect it, and also have access to it to use it to buy discounted assets by positioning it in your own banking system through the infinite banking concept strategy. Producers Wealth has put together a presentation at yourownbankingsystem.com where you will learn how to position capital outside of the banking system and the Wall Street casino, just like the ultra wealthy, to protect it and create a pool of tax-free liquid capital to capitalize on the massive opportunity to buy discounted assets, which is coming. You can access the presentation at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com. So when you hear the term, then, oh, there's deglobalization going on. What it just is loss of Western influence, is a better way of putting it. Everybody else is forming relationships and trade partnerships and doing business and doing trade deals and so forth. But the Western influence is lost because of the loss of confidence in the Western system. And I mean, like, I can pull some just news headlines here. I mean, how could you have confidence in such a system? Here's somebody just sent me this from Bloomberg, where there was literally an opinion piece did. 2024 is the year of elections, and that's a threat to democracy. That's a news headline.
I saw that.
By saw Bloomberg. That. I mean, so it says here, here's the subheadline. It gets better. More than 40% of the global population will be voting this year, and we have a 10% chance everything will go well.
Me, I saw that. I woke up this morning super early to get on some phone calls, and I checked some of my channels of communications with close friends and stuff, and that was one of them that was in there. I didn't read through the whole machinations of it, but I saw the basic headlines, and I was like, "Hey, look, here's the thing, mate. We know what they're literally subverting language.
Yep,
they're literally subverting language, so that people will when they basically implement some authoritarian, technocratic, feudalist system, which is what they're attempting to implement, they will do it under the banner of democracy. Why? Because the vast majority of the world have been conditioned to believe that democracy is the best thing, right? If you take democracy and you put a facade on it and you say this is what it is, but behind the scenes it's something completely different, by the time you've implemented what you want with the facade of democracy, once it's in place, you just simply drop the facade. And guess what you have? Well, you have this techno-feudalistic system that people can't get out of. In fact, I brought it up here. As you were speaking, it triggered something in my head, and it was a quote from Frank Zappa, which I'll read now, and I think it's a perfect illustration of where we're at with respect to that political framework. Predominantly in the United States, but certainly across the Western Davos world, if you will. This is the quote: "The illusion of freedom will continue as long as it's profitable to continue the illusion. At the point where the illusion becomes too expensive to maintain, they will just take down the scenery. They will pull back the curtains. They will move the tables and chairs out of the way, and you will see the brick wall at the back of the theater."
Very, very well put. I think that's a very good way to put into context what we're seeing, which is going to lead to a lot of turbulence. So one of the themes, obviously, looking at 2024 is chaos. As we've said, it's set up here in the United States. It's set up in the West with that Bloomberg headline. Some of the other things that you were talking about, so people would say, well, oh, this deglobalization theme, which is just loss of Western influence, is deflationary. And I think that was one of the things that you wanted to touch base on, this debate, whether in the West and in Western countries, is it inflationary? Is it deflationary? Or will it become a little bit more inflationary for the markets in election years? Globally, because that might be another thing. Countries want to portray everything as rosy. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, without trying to sound like an economist, where they go, it depends. I would say actually both deflation and inflation, specifically stagflation, which is a shitty actual economy with rising costs of goods, specifically often the very goods that you need. In other words, the needs, not the wants. And so, for example, as you have falling real GDP. And actually, GDP is a shitty measure anyway, because it includes government spending. If we have falling real wages, you have less disposable income. With a less disposable income situation, you will spend less money on Netflix subscriptions or holidays or, you know, your typical disposable income brackets. At the same time as that's taking place, we are seeing supply side issues with respect to many of the actual needs: power, electricity, food, energy being the dominant one, which of course translates into most every product that is produced on the planet, transported, etc., etc. And this is going to be, and I've been saying this for a number of years, and it's been proven correct thus far, and I don't anticipate it changing significantly. We're going to see a supply side stagflation. Most people, including hedge fund managers like myself, financial experts, are often looking back in their rearview mirror, being one of their own, their experience in their own lifetime. Okay, so if you take my cohort, your cohort, we've not in our lifetimes where we've experienced inflation and deflation, it's largely been liquidity driven events that causes a deflationary impact. And then in the inflation side, it's been demand driven. It's been Asia growing, it's been Middle East growing, it's been this demand led growth. And so now those individuals are looking at this going, okay, why would we have inflation? And they're going, well, the last time we had inflation, it was demand-led growth. Where is the demand-led growth coming from? And they're struggling to find a very strong narrative or reasoning as to why and where that might come from. What most people are not paying attention to is the supply side. And the supply side has been massively impacted over the course of the last decade. You mentioned before, ESG, DEI, all of this woke nonsense. It has been directed almost, not entirely, but quite specifically towards the fossil fuel industry, for example, right?
Yep.
And as a consequence, there has been a massive lack of capital expenditure across the energy space and also across the infrastructure space. So in the Western world, we're seeing a lot of infrastructure that is very, very due for a repair, okay? And it's not being repaired. That needs to be repaired because the ability to transport, the ability to bring electricity, et cetera, to homes, all of these things starts becoming an issue. And it's one of those things that's like it's a trend, right? It'll go slowly, 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 and then it just collapses. And we know this because we can highlight it with Eskom. Okay, Eskom kind of just trundled along. It was worse and worse and worse. You get a few blackouts, and then it was literally just chaos. The whole thing just collapsed. And now you're in a situation where there's like 15 hours a day that is out, where it's black. It's not 15 hours a day of power and the rest isn't. No, you've done nothing. So we're moving into an environment like that, okay? So that requires massive capital expenditure if you are to bring it back online. So again, supply side is a significant issue. I think people have not paid sufficient attention to the impact of the supply side, and supply not just in actual commodities, but also the financing of it. You know, if you go into shipping, you go into many of these large capital intensive industries, the ability to finance it, because in most instances, it's debt financed. You know, if we're quite long drill ships, for example. You want to put our drill rig out in the ocean, it's about 1.2 billion. Each of those is going to about 4 OSVs. Those are 60 million. This is a very capital intensive type of business. It's not one that's equity financed. It's debt financed. You want to go and debt finance something like that on Wall Street, where they're all trying to figure out their new pronouns? Like, it's very, very difficult. And as a consequence, there's no new supply coming on. Okay. So, and we still, by the way, get 30% of global oil comes from offshore. So these are very, you know, asymmetric types of setups. And coming back to the deflation-inflation debate, it's very difficult for me to make a case that we're going to see deflation across the board when you have these supply-side issues. The other thing that's worth pondering is that we are in this very geopolitically unstable world, which has already got two wars broken out, one in Ukraine, one in Israel now. You mentioned Taiwan. Somebody just bombed Iran, okay?
Yep.
There's clearly a move towards trying to bring them into the war and to create a global conflict. Now, I don't know if that happens. However, we're seeing a lot of this breaking out. I've also never, ever, in all my research, found a war economy that's deflationary. I ask anyone to find me one. And so if you're looking back over the last 20-odd years and you go, okay, we didn't have any major wars, the only time we had inflation was demand-led growth, there's not enough demand-led growth, we're fine. The risk now is deflation. I understand that, and I think you're very, very wrong.
I want to acknowledge one of our sponsors. Are you ready to ride the wave of success in the booming car wash industry? Tommy's Express Car Wash is the cutting-edge brand that is revolutionizing the way we clean vehicles. Demand for top-notch, state-of-the-art tunnel car wash is skyrocketing. Institutions are diving in headfirst, and the real asset investor is already a step ahead. They have a world-class operations team, and they're building a portfolio of Tommy's Express car washes that's on track to become one of the largest privately owned car wash portfolios in the United States. The margins on a stabilized Tommy's Express car wash are incredible, and accredited investors have the chance to join them on their adventure. Dave Zook, the founder and CEO of The Real Asset Investor, and his team are thrilled to share opportunities like Tommy's Car Wash with accredited investors that boost your cash flow, unlocks massive tax benefits, and get you set up for a lucrative exit just a few years from now. To learn more about the opportunities offered by The Real Asset Investor, you can reach out to them at info@therealassetinvestor.com. That's info@therealassetinvestor.com.
The war globally, a big global war, will solve a lot of problems too.
It gives the ability to wipe out debt. It gives the justification to tell the rubes that they can't get the pensions that they had put all their life savings into because Putin, because you know, Bin Salman, like pick Xi Jinping, whatever, right?
Yep.
Again, history repeats, and this isn't me taking sides with one or the other. I don't care about taking sides. My job is to protect, I'm a fiduciary. I have to protect capital and try and grow it. So I have to look at the world as a realist, not as what I want it to be. And in that world, it is very clear where things are headed to. There is an absolute inability to pay off the debts that exist. It is not possible. Not even via inflation. We have crossed the Rubicon on that. And what that means is that there has to be something else. You either have a debt repudiation. Often when that takes place, the ruling elite get replaced. They understand that, which is why they need to have a justification whereby the populace don't put their heads on a stick. Typically, that's war.
It's transitioning from one system to another system, which is established and set up. And now you're looking at, okay, how are we going to transition to this? Because it looks like every system that the world operates on is in the moment in a collapse. It's collapsing. So you're going to have to transition over to another one, right? What do you, especially if you look at it from the monetary system, the banking and the financial system, the debt and so forth. Mm-hmm.
Well, if we look at some of the tools, if you will, of coercion that have been utilized over the course of the last few years, certainly within the financial system, as an example, we have the Russian debts that were, shall we say, seized or stolen or whatever, as they entered Ukraine, right? So by doing that, it wasn't so much about whether that was a problem for Russia or not. It was a problem. But the point that was made was like the rest of the world was put on notice that if you don't do what we want you to do, we have control of the financial system. Most countries are holding, their central banks are holding treasuries. And in most instances, those treasuries are held via intermediary banks in New York. It's BNY, it's Citibank. And so you realize quite quickly, holy shit, I might not actually own what I thought I owned, right? As a country. And that puts you in a very precarious situation because even if you disagree with whatever is taking place, you can't fight a war if you haven't got capital. And if they've got your capital, you're done. So what it did was it put every country on notice. And as a consequence, it made every country start to move towards de-risking that situation. So we are today further down the track of countries in a move to de-risking that situation. China at the front of it is being very, very smart about this. They're doing dollar yuan swaps, right? And they did it. So if you go all the way back to when Russia in, what was it, 2016 went through this crisis, Russia let their currency float. They got they needed dollars at the time. They got dollars from Beijing, and there was a swap back into payments that are required in yuan, which actually creates demand for yuan on a global basis going forward. And by the way, they're doing this all across Africa. They will, at some point, have the ability to turn around and say, we want all of this in yuan. And they will have the ability to create yuan demand at scale. And people are not paying attention to this. They're playing the long game. So, but in the financial world, certainly the infrastructure is still Western dominated. And so they're using that power to coerce, to influence, to hold together the empire. So it's a battle. We're in this battle. And those are the risks, not just for nations, but there are the risks for individuals like us who have a strong propensity towards freedom. it's important to understand these sort of geopolitical things taking place. Really just, I think one of the biggest risks that people have is in not being diversified. But I don't think it's a time at this point, just in currency markets, for example, to be able to say, hey, we should go long this currency or short that currency. I don't think the currencies matter as much because ultimately any dominant currency, if you go through historical cycles, becomes dominant as a consequence typically of their economy being the dominant economy. That itself is often their balance sheet, which is why we're seeing Russia, China, India, Turkey, even Poland now being net buyers of the central banks, being net buyers of gold. Why? Because they are preparing themselves for a reset. Poland's doing it because they can see that the breakup of the EU is coming. And by the way, Hungary's been doing it now for over 5 years, building up those reserves. The EU is very, very unstable. And the euro is very, very unstable. One of these things, and the Davos elites understand this, which is why they're moving as quickly as they can to try to implement a digital currency where they can repudiate all these debts, get rid of the euro, and have the cattle all in one spot. But the infrastructure is not in place. They don't have it yet. They're rushing to try and get it at the same time that the bond markets are under immense pressure.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors, Penumbra Solutions. Life Settlements Investments have allowed financial and banking institutions to not only buy their equity contractually, but also diversify their capital from any economic, market, and geopolitical risk. It's been part of the $1 billion blueprint followed by institutional investors. If you're an accredited investor, you can also now participate in this vehicle with enormous growth potential. You can watch an informational webinar presented by one of the premier organizations providing life settlement investments, Penumbra Solutions at cashflowninja.com/life settlements. That's cashflowninja.com/life settlements. The password to access that webinar is Penumbra, all lowercase.
Chris, you've shared when systems become too complex, as more and more layers of complexity gets piled on top of this already complex system, it eventually collapses. Is that what you're seeing now with all these many systems that are in the process of collapsing and very, very evident of doing so in the West?
Complexity in and of itself is not specifically a problem, provided that it's decentralized. So you could have your own setup, right? You have your own setup. You're doing what you're doing. I'm doing what I'm doing. We can collaborate as we are now, and that can bring a net beneficial outcome to people. The problem comes when we try and centralize control. If we centralize control of your business and my business, that might bring efficiencies. Quite possibly. We keep doing that. You get to a point where there is no marginal increase in value, in output, as a consequence of centralizing something. We have reached that point. The complexities of the Western world, the Western financial system, the debt markets, everything down to grocery chains, we've squeezed all of the additional output typically out of the markets, and it's increasingly being consolidated. But now if you're the consolidator, you don't want to get rid of that power because you're at the 1% or 0.1%. You're profiting handsomely from this, even though your average person is not getting a beneficial outcome. Prices are going up, quality is going down. These people don't care. And so we have this complexity combined with the centralization of it. And when we get that, historically, it collapses. That's where we're at today.
What are some of the things that investors can do to protect capital in this chaotic environment? It's about to get a lot more chaotic. And also capitalize on asymmetric opportunities that will be available in this chaotic environment.
We look at deep value. We say, okay, where on a relative basis does the value exist in the world? That's one thing. Then you can overlay that with a geopolitical framework to understand as best as we can. And we don't have all the answers, maybe even half the answers. But you're in the game. You have to play it because the repercussions are extreme. We're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy, as they say. So you have to step up to the plate. You have to do your best to navigate this environment. What we are doing, I won't speak for anyone else. This is how we operate. We do what we do with our own money. We do it for our clients' capital, and we do it for our subscribers, is we tell them what we're doing, and they can make up their own minds. Largely, we are invested into the sectors of the economy that are impacted by the supply side. That has led us almost exclusively or largely into the commodity markets, energy markets in particular. Again, with an overlay of geopolitically understanding kind of what's going on in the world. For example, we're not going to go invest in a coal mine in Germany, even though coal has done exceptionally well for us, right? Why? Because they're all woke and they're worried about Greta and et cetera, et cetera. So the other thing I think that is worth looking at is being diversified, dependent upon individuals' financial situation, how much capital they've got. If you are a wealthier individual and you have the ability to, I think not having capital outside of the Western system is very risky to me at this point in time. I understand that the not so well-traveled people and certainly those who pay too much attention to Western media will look at certain countries and say that's too scary and they're all like authoritarian or whatever. I would simply say wake up to some realities. And I think diversification is very important. I could talk all day right, on various things that we're doing. But broadly, I think it's pay attention to where the supply issues are a problem. Pay attention to the geopolitical issues as they're transpiring so that you are at least diversified within sectors. For example, if you're going to be in oil and gas, don't just be in oil and gas in a company that's, say, in Canada that has a project in Canada. If that's your only positioning with respect to that sector, have a look at what other options you might have. And I'm not saying that that's not a bad investment. It might be a fantastic investment. I'm just saying that we are in a very precarious environment. Being not having diversification in that environment, I think, is a dangerous, more dangerous than it's been in at any time in my career. So that's something that people need to pay attention to.
Chris, thank you so much for coming back on the show and again, sharing your insights and providing so much value. Always appreciate our conversations and always have a ton of takeaways. Where can my listeners and viewers get in touch and look at what you're up to, and where can they follow you? I know you're very active on social media and put out an incredible newsletter at Capitalist Exploits.
So capitalistexploits.at, A for Apple, T for Tomato is the website. That's our research-based business. You can jump on there, and we have a paid product and we have some free stuff as well. And for those a little bit better well-heeled, if they don't wish to look after their own capital, then we have Glen Orchy Capital, which is for accredited investors, and that's our fund asset management business, and that's glenorchycapital.net. Other than that, social media, the only social media that I actually use is Twitter. I try not to spend too much time on even that. I'm trying to think what my handle is. It's at CapitalistEXP, I think. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you again.
You're most welcome. It's good to see you again.
Thank you to all of our listeners and our viewers for spending most valuable resource, your time, once again with me on the show. Everything Cashflow Ninja is at CashflowNinja.com. That's CashflowNinja.com. Until next time, live infinitely. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.